Fat lunchtime was no longer celebrated in the centre of Genua, but in the shanty town around the high white buildings it strutted its dark and torchlit stuff. There were fireworks, there were dancers and fire-eaters and feathers and sequins. The witches, whose idea of homely entertainment was a Morris dance, watched open-mouthed from the crowded sidewalk as the parades strutted by. "There's dancing skeletons," said Nanny, as a score of bony figures whirred down the street. "They're not," said Magrat. "They're just men in black tights with bones painted on." Someone nudged Granny Weatherwax. She looked up into the large, grinning face of a black man. He passed her a stone jug. "There you go, honey." Granny took it, hesitated for a moment, and then took a swig. She nudged Magrat and passed on the bottle.
"He's here," she said.
"What?" shouted Magrat above the noise of the marching band.
"The man wants us to pass it on," said Granny.
Magrat looked at the bottleneck. She tried surreptitiously to wipe it on her dress, despite the self-evident fact that germs on it would have burned off long ago. She ventured a brief nip and then nudged Nanny Ogg.
"Quizzitanger,"
she said and dabbed at her eyes. Nanny upended the bottle. After a while, Magrat nudged her again.
"I think we're meant to pass it on," she ventured.
Nanny wiped her mouth and passed the now rather lighter jug randomly to a tall figure on her left.
"Here you go, mister," she said.
"Thank you.
Nice costume you got there. Them bones are painted on really good."
Nanny turned back to watch a procession of juggling fire-eaters. Then a connection appeared to be made somewhere in the back of her mind. She looked up. The stranger had wandered off. She shrugged.
"What shall we do next?" she said.
Granny Weatherwax was staring fixedly at a group of Ground Zero limbo dancers. A lot of the dancers in the parades had this in common. They expressed explicitly what things like maypoles only hinted at. They covered it with sequins, too.
"You'll never feel safe in the privy again, eh?" said Nanny Ogg.
At her feet, Grebo sat primly watching some dancing women wearing nothing but feathers, trying to work out what to do about them.
"No, I was thinking of something else. I was thinking about how stories work. And now, I think I'd like something to eat," said Granny weakly. She rallied a bit. "And I mean, some proper food, not something scraped off the bottom of a pond. And I don't want any of this cuisine stuff neither."
"You ought to be more adventurous, Granny," said Magrat.
"I ain't against adventure, in moderation," said Granny, "but not when I'm eating."
"There's a place back there that does alligator sandwiches," said Nanny, turning away from the parade. "Can you believe that? Alligators in a sandwich."
"That reminds me of a joke," said Granny Weatherwax.
Something was nagging at her consciousness. Nanny Ogg started to cough, but it didn't work.
"This man went into an inn," said Granny Weatherwax, trying to ignore the rising uneasiness, "and he saw this sign, and it said, 'We serve all kinds of sandwiches,' and he said, 'Get me an alligator sandwich, and I want it right away.'"
"I don't think alligator sandwiches is very kind to alligators," said Magrat, dropping the observation into the leaden pause.
"I always say a laugh does you good," said Nanny.
Lilith smiled at the figure of Ella standing forlornly between the snake women.
"And such a raggedy dress, too," she said. "And the door to the room was locked. Tut, tut! However can it have happened?"
Ella stared at her feet.
Lilith smiled at the sisters. "Well," she said, "we'll just have to do the best we can with what we've got. Fetch me 2 rats and 2 mice. I know you can always find rats and mice. And bring in the big pumpkin."
She laughed. Not the mad, shrill laughter of the bad fairy who's been defeated, but the rather pleasant laughter of someone who's just seen the joke. She looked reflectively at the wand.
"But first," she said, transferring her gaze to Ella's pale face, "you'd better bring in those naughty men who let themselves get so drunk.
That's not respectful.
And if you haven't got respect, you haven't got anything."
The clicking of the wand was the only sound in the kitchen. Nanny Ogg poked at the tall drink in front of her.
"Beats me why they puts an umbrella in it," she said, sucking the cocktail cherry off the stick. "I mean, do they want to stop it getting wet or something?"
She grinned at Magrat and Granny, who were both staring gloomily at the passing celebrations. "Cheer up," she said. "Never seen such a pair of long faces in all me puff."
"That's neat rum you're drinking," said Magrat.
"You're telling me," said Nanny, taking a swig. "Cheers!"
"It was too easy," said Granny Weatherwax.
"It was only easy 'cause we done it," said Nanny. "You want something done, we're the girls to do it, eh? You show me anyone else who could have nipped in there and done all that in the nick of time, eh? Especially the coach bit."
"It doesn't make a good story," said Granny.
"Oh, bugger stories," said Nanny loftily. "You can always change a story."
"Only at the right places," said Granny. "Anyway, maybe they could get her a new dress and horses and a coach and everything."
"Where? When?" said Nanny. "It's a holiday, and there's no time anyway. They'll be starting the ball at any moment."
Granny Weatherwax's fingers drummed on the edge of the cafe table. Nanny sighed.
"Now what?" she said.
"It doesn't happen like this," said Granny.
"Listen, Esme, the only kind of magic that'd work right now is wand magic, and Magrat's got the wand."
Nanny nodded at Magrat.
"Ain't that so, Magrat?"
Said Magrat.
"Not lost it, have you?"
"No, but there you are, then. Only, Ella said she'd got two godmothers."
Granny Weatherwax's hand thumped down on the table. Nanny's drink flew into the air and overturned.
"That's right," roared Granny.
"That was nearly full. That was nearly a full drink," said Nanny reproachfully.
"Come on.
Best part of a whole glass of...
Gither!"
"Did I say I wasn't coming? I was just pointing..."
"Now!"
"Can I just ask the man to get me another..."
"Gither!"
The witches were halfway up the street when a coach rattled out of the driveway and trundled away.
"That can't be it," said Magrat. "We got rid of it."
"We ought to have chopped it up," said Nanny. "There's good eating on a pumpkin."
"They've got us," said Granny, slowing down to a stop.
"Can't you get into the minds of the horses?" said Magrat.
The witches concentrated.
"They ain't horses," said Nanny. "They feel like..."
"Rats turned into horses," said Granny, who was even better at getting into people's minds than she was at getting under their skins. "They feel like that poor old wolf. Mine's like a firework display."
She winced at the taste of them in her own head.
"I bet," said Granny thoughtfully as the coach skidded around the corner, "I bet I could make the wheels fall right off."
"That's not the way," said Magrat. "Anyway, Ella's in there."
"There may be another way," said Nanny. "I know someone who could get inside their minds right enough."
"Who?" said Magrat. "Well, we've still got our brooms," said Nanny. "It should be easy to overtake it, right?"
The witches landed in an alleyway a few minutes ahead of the coach.
"I don't hold with this," said Granny. "It's the sort of thing Lily does. You can't expect me to like this. Think of that wolf."
Nanny lifted Grebo out of his nest among the bristles.
"But Grebo's nearly human anyway," she said.
"Heh!"
"And it'll only be temporary, even with the three of us doing it," she said. "Anyway, it'll be interesting to see if it works."
"Yes, but it's wrong," said Granny.
"Not for these parts, it seems," said Nanny.
"Besides," said Magrat virtuously, "it can't be bad if we're doing it. We're the good ones."
"Oh, yes, so he is," said Granny. "And there was me forgetting it for a minute there."
Nanny stood back. Grebo, aware that something was expected of him, sat up.
"You must admit we can't think of anything better, Granny," said Magrat.
Granny hesitated, but under all the revulsion was the little treacherous flame of fascination with the idea. Besides, she and Grebo had hated one another cordially for years.
"Almost human, eh? Give him a taste of it then and see how he likes it."
She felt a bit ashamed of the thought, but not much.
"Oh, all right."
They concentrated. As Lily knew, changing the shape of an object is one of the hardest magics there is. But it's easier if the object is alive. After all, a living thing already knows what shape it is. All you have to do is change its mind. Grebo yawned and stretched. To his amazement, he went on stretching. Through the pathways of his feline brain surged a tide of belief. He suddenly believed he was human. He wasn't simply under the impression that he was human, he believed it, implicitly. The sheer force of the unshakable belief flowed out into his morphic field, overriding its objections, rewriting the very blueprint of his self. Fresh instructions surged back. If he was human, he didn't need all this fur, and he ought to be bigger. The witches watched, fascinated.
"I never thought we'd do it," said Granny.
No points on the ears. The whiskers were too long. He needed more muscle. All these bones were the wrong shape. These legs ought to be longer. And then it was finished. Grebo unfolded himself and stood up, a little unsteadily. Nanny stared, her mouth open. And then her eyes moved downwards.
"Caw," she said.
"I think," said Granny Weatherwax, "that we'd better imagine some clothes on him right now."
That was easy enough. When Grebo had been clothed to her satisfaction, Granny nodded and stood back.
"Magrat, you can open your eyes," she said.
I hadn't got them closed.
Well, you should have had.
Grebo turned slowly, a faint, lazy smile on his scarred face. As a human, his nose was broken and a black patch covered his bad eye. But the other one glittered like the sins of angels, and his smile was the downfall of saints. Female ones, anyway. Perhaps it was pheromones, or the way his muscles rippled under his black leather shirt. Grebo broadcast a kind of greasy, diabolic sexuality in the megawatt range. Just looking at him was enough to set dark wings fluttering in the crimson night.
Grebo, said Nanny.
He opened his mouth. Incisors glittered.
"Row,"
he said.
"Can you understand me?"
"Yes, Nanny."
Nanny Og leaned against the wall for support. There was the sound of hooves. The coach had turned into the street.
"Get out there and stop that coach."
Grebo grinned again and darted out of the alley. Nanny fanned herself with her hat.
"Whoo-wee," she said. "And to think I used to tickle his tummy. No wonder all the lady cats scream at night."
"Give her."
"Well, you've gone very red, Esme."
"I'm just out of breath," said Granny.
"Funny that. It's not as if you've been running."
The coach rattled down the street. The coachman and footman were not at all sure what they were. Their minds oscillated wildly. One moment they were men thinking about cheese and bacon rinds, and the next they were mice, wondering why they had trousers on. As for the horses, horses are a little insane anyway, and being a rat as well wasn't any help. So none of them were in a very stable frame of mind when Grebo stepped out of the shadows and grinned at them. He said,
"Rawr."
The horses tried to stop, which is practically impossible with a coach still piling along behind you. The coachman froze in terror.
"Rawr."
The coach skidded around and came up broadside against a wall, knocking the coachman off. Grebo picked one of them up by his collar and bounced him up and down, while the maddened horses fought to get out of the shafts.
"Run away, furry toy,"
he suggested. Behind the frightened eyes, man and mouse fought for supremacy. But they needn't have bothered. They would lose either way. As consciousness flickered between the states, it saw either a grinning cat or a 6-foot, well-muscled, one-eyed, grinning bully. The coach mouse fainted. Grebo patted him a few times in case he was going to move.
"Wake up, little mousey,"
and then lost interest. The coach door rattled, jammed, and then opened.
"What's happening?" said Ella.
Nanny Og's boot hit Grebo on the back of his head.
"Oh, no, you don't, my lad," she said.
"Want to," said Grebo sulkily.
"You always do, that's your trouble," said Nanny, and smiled at Ella. "Out you come, dear."
Grebo shrugged and then slunk off, dragging the stunned coachman after him.
"What's happening?" complained Ella. "Oh, Magrat, did you do this?"
Magrat allowed herself a moment's shy pride.
"I said you wouldn't have to go to the ball, didn't I?"
Ella looked around at the disabled coach and then back to the witches.
"You ain't got any snake women in there with you, have you?" said Granny.
Magrat gripped the wand.
"They went on ahead," said Ella. Her face clouded as she recalled something. "Lilith turned the real coachman into beetles," she whispered. "I mean, they weren't that bad. She made them get some mice, and she made them human, and then she said, there's got to be balance, and the sisters dragged in the coachman, and she turned them into beetles, and then she trod on them." She stopped, horrified. A firework burst in the sky, but in the street below, a bubble of terrible silence hung in the air. "Witches don't kill people," said Magrat. "This is foreign parts," muttered Nanny, looking away. "I think," said Granny Weatherwax, "that you ought to get right away from here, young lady."
"They just went crack."
"We've got the brooms," said Magrat. "We could all get away." "She'd send something after you," said Ella darkly. "I know her. Something from out of a mirror."
"So we'd fight it," said Magrat.
"No," said Granny. "Whatever's going to happen's going to happen here. We'll send the young lady off somewhere safe and then we shall see."
"But if I go away, she'll know," said Ella. "She's expecting to see me at the ball right now, and she'll come looking."
"That sounds right, Esme," said Nanny Ogg. "You want to face her somewhere you choose. I don't want her looking for us on a night like this. I want to see her coming."
There was a fluttering in the darkness above them. A small dark shape glided down and landed on the cobbles. Even in the darkness its eyes gleamed. It stared expectantly at the witches with far too much intelligence for a mere fowl.
"That's Mrs. Goggles Cockerel," said Nanny. "Ain't it?"
"Exactly what it is, I might never exactly decide," said Granny. "I wish I knew where she stood."
"Good or bad, you mean?" said Magrat.
"She's a good cook," said Nanny. "I don't think anyone can cook like she do and be that bad."
"Is she the woman who lives out in the swamp?" said Ella. "I've heard all kinds of stories about her."
"She's a bit too ready to turn dead people into zombies," said Granny, "and that's not right."
"Well, we just turned a cat into a person. I mean, a human person."
Nanny, inveterate cat lover, corrected herself.
"And that's not strictly right either. It's probably a long way from strictly right."
"Yes, but we did it for the right reasons," said Granny.
"We don't know what Mrs. Goggles' reasons are."
There was a growl from the alleyway. Nanny scuttled towards it, and they heard her scolding voice.
"No, put him down this minute."
"Mine, mine."
Legba strutted a little way along the street and then turned and looked expectantly at them. Granny scratched her chin and walked a little way away from Magrat and Ella, sizing them up. Then she turned and looked around.
She said. "Lily is expecting to see you, ain't she?"
"She can look out of reflections," said Ella nervously.
Said Granny again. She stuck her finger in her ear and twiddled it for a moment. "Well, Magrat, you're the godmother around here. What's the most important thing we have to do?"
Magrat had never played a card game in her life.
"Keep Ella safe," she said promptly, amazed at Granny suddenly admitting that she was, after all, the one who had been given the wand. "That's what fairy godmothering is all about."
"Yes?"
Granny Weatherwax frowned.
"You know," she said, "you two are just about the same size."
Magrat's expression of puzzlement lasted for a half a second before it was replaced by one of sudden horror. She backed away.
"Someone's got to do it," said Granny.
"Oh, no. No, it wouldn't work. It really wouldn't work. No."
"Magrat Garlic," said Granny Weatherwax triumphantly, "you shall go to the ball."
The coach cornered on two wheels. Grebo stood on the coachman's box, swaying and grinning madly and cracking the whip. This was even better than his fluffy ball with a bell in it. Inside the coach, Magrat was wedged between the two older witches, her head in her hands.
But Ella might get lost in the swamp.
"Not with that cockerel leading the way. She'll be safer in Mrs. Goggle's swamp than at the ball, I know that," said Nanny.
"Thank you."
"You're welcome," said Granny.
"Everyone'll know I'm not her."
"Not with the mask on, they won't," said Granny.
"But my hair's the wrong colour."
"I can tint that up a treat, no problem," said Nanny.
"I'm the wrong shape."
"We can..."
Granny hesitated.
"Can you puff yourself out a bit more?"
"No."
"Have you got a spare handkerchief, Giffer?"
I reckon I could tear a bit off my petticoat, Esme. Ouch! There. And these glass shoes don't fit. They fit me fine, said Nanny. I gave them a try. Yes, but I've got smaller feet than you.
That's all right, said Granny. You put on a couple of pairs of my socks and they'll fit real snug.
Bereft of all further excuses, Magrat struck out in sheer desperation. But I don't know how to behave at balls. Granny Weatherwax had to admit that she didn't either. She raised her eyebrows at Nanny.
You used to go dancing when you were young, she said.
Well, said Nanny Ogg, social tutor, what you do is you tap men with your fan. Got your fan? And say things like, La, sir. It helps to giggle, too. And flutter your eyelashes a bit. And pout. How am I supposed to pout? Nanny Ogg demonstrated. Oh, yuck.
Don't worry, said Granny. We'll be there, too.
And that's supposed to make me feel better, is it? Nanny reached behind Magrat and grabbed Granny's shoulder. Her lips formed the words, won't work, she's all to pieces, no confidence. Granny nodded. Perhaps I ought to do it, said Nanny in a loud voice. I'm experienced at balls. I bet if I wore my hair long and wore the musk and them shiny shoes and we hemmed up the dress a foot, no one would know the difference. What do you say? Magrat was so overawed by the sheer fascinating picture of this that she obeyed unthinkingly when Granny Weatherwax said,
Look at me, Magrat Garlic.
The pumpkin coach entered the palace drive at high speed, scattering horses and pedestrians, and braked by the steps in a shower of gravel.
That was fun, said Grebo, and then lost interest.
A couple of flunkies bustled forward to open the door and were nearly thrown back by the sheer force of the arrogance that emanated from within.
Hurry up, peasants! Magrat swept out, pushing the majordomo away. She gathered up her skirts and ran up the red carpet. At the top, a footman was unwise enough to ask for her ticket.
You impertinent lackey!
The footman, recognising instantly the boundless bad manners of the well-bred, backed away quickly. Down by the coach, Nanny Ogg said,
You don't think you might have overdone it a little bit?
I had to, said Granny. You know what she's like.
How are we going to get in? We ain't got tickets, and we ain't dressed properly either.
Get the broomsticks down off the rack, said Granny. We're going straight to the top.
They touched down on the battlements of a tower overlooking the palace grounds. The strains of courtly music drifted up from below, and there was the occasional pop and flare of fireworks from the river. Granny opened a likely-looking door in the tower and descended the circular stairs which led to a landing.
Posh carpet on the floor, said Nanny. Why is it on the walls, too?
Them's tapestries, said Granny.
Cure, said Nanny. You live and learn.
Well, I do, anyway.
Granny stopped with her hands on a doorknob.
What do you mean by that? She said.
Well, I never knew you had a sister.
We never talked about her.
It's a shame when families break up like that, said Nanny.
Eh? You said your sister Beryl was a greedy ingrate with the conscience of an oyster.
Well, yes, but she is my sister.
Granny opened the door.
Well, well, she said. What's up? What's up? Don't just stand there.
Nanny peered around her and into the room.
Coo,
she said. Magrat paused in the big red velvet anteroom. Strange thoughts fireworked around her head. She hadn't felt like this since the herbal wine. But struggling among them like a tiny prosaic potato in a spray of psychedelic chrysanthemums was an inner voice screaming that she didn't even know how to dance, apart from in circles. But it couldn't be difficult if ordinary people managed it. The tiny inner Magrat, struggling to keep its balance on the surge of an arrogant self-confidence, wondered if this was how Granny Weatherwax felt all the time. She raised the hem of her dress slightly and looked down at her shoes. They couldn't be real glass, or else she'd be hobbling towards some emergency first aid by now. Nor were they transparent. The human foot is a useful organ, but is not, except to some people with highly specialised interests, particularly attractive to look at. The shoes were mirrors. Dozens of facets caught in the light. Two mirrors on her feet. Magrat vaguely recalled something about a witch never getting caught between two mirrors, wasn't it? Or was it never trust a man with orange eyebrows?
Something she'd been taught back when she'd been an ordinary person. Something like, a witch should never stand between two mirrors because the person that walked away might not be the same person. Or something. Like you were spread out among the images, your whole soul was pulled out thin, and somewhere in the distant images a dark part of you would get out and come looking for you, if you weren't very careful. Or something. She overruled the thought. It didn't matter. She stepped forward to where a little knot of other guests were waiting to make their entrance.
Lord Henry Gleet and Lady Gleet.
The ballroom wasn't a room at all, but a courtyard open to the soft night airs. Steps led down into it. At the far end, another much wider staircase, lined with flickering torches, led up into the palace itself. On the far wall, huge and easily visible, was a clock.
The Honourable Douglas Incessant.
The time was 7:45. Magrat had a vague recollection of some old woman shouting something about the time, but that didn't matter either.
Lady Volentia d'Arrangement.
She reached the top of the stairs. The butler, who was announcing the arrivals, looked her up and down, and then, in the manner of one who had been coached carefully all afternoon for this very moment, bellowed,
Mysterious and beautiful stranger!
Silence spread out from the bottom of the steps like spilled paint. 500 heads turned to look at Magrat. A day before, even the mere thought of having 500 people staring at her would have melted Magrat like butter in a furnace. But now, she stared back, smiled, and raised her chin haughtily. Her fan snapped open like a gunshot. The mysterious and beautiful stranger, daughter of Simplicity Garlic, granddaughter of Araminta Garlic, her self-possession churning so strongly that it was crystallizing out on the sides of her personality, stepped out. A moment later, another guest stalked past the butler. The butler hesitated. Something about the figure worried him. It kept going in and out of focus. He wasn't entirely certain if there was anyone else there at all. Then his common sense, which had temporarily gone and hidden behind something, took over. After all, it was Samedi Nuit Mort. People were supposed to dress up and look weird. You were allowed to see people like that.
Excuse me, sir, he said. Who shall I say it is?
I'm here incognito.
The butler was sure nothing had been said, but he was also certain that he had heard the words.
Fine, he mumbled.
Go on in, then.
He brightened.
Damn good mask, sir.
He watched the dark figure walk down the steps and leaned against a pillar. Well, that was about it. He pulled a handkerchief out from his pocket, removed his powdered wig and wiped his brow. He felt as though he'd just had a narrow escape. And what was even worse was that he didn't know from what. He looked cautiously around and then sidled into the anteroom and took up a position behind a velvet curtain where he could enjoy a quiet roll-up. He nearly swallowed it when another figure loped silently up the red carpet. It was dressed like a pirate that had just raided a ship, carrying black leather goods for the discerning customer. One eye had a patch over it, the other gleamed like a malevolent emerald, and no one that big ought to be able to walk that quietly. The butler stuck the dog end behind his ear.
"Excuse me, my lord," he said,
running after the man and touching him firmly yet respectfully on the arm.
"I shall need to see your ticket.
The man transferred his gaze to the hand on his arm. The butler let go hurriedly.
"Row! Your ticket."
The man opened his mouth and hissed.
"Of course,"
said the butler, backing away with the efficient speed of someone who certainly isn't being paid enough to face a needle-toothed maniac in black leather.
"I expect you're one of the Duke's friends, yes?"
"Row!
No problem, no problem, but Sir has forgotten Sir's mask."
"Row!"
The butler waved frantically to a side table piled high with masks.
"The Duke requested that everyone here is masked," said the butler. I wonder if Sir would find something here to his liking?"
There's always a few of them, he thought to himself. It says mask in big curly letters on the invite, in gold yet. But there's always a few buggers who thinks it means it's from someone called Maskew. This one was quite likely looting towns when he should have been learning to read. The greasy man stared at the masks.
All the good ones had been taken by earlier arrivals, but that didn't seem to dismay him. He pointed.
"Want that one," he said.
Very good choice, my lord. Allow me to help you on..." The man glared at him, then dropped the mask over his head and squinted out through an eyehole at a mirror. "Damn odd," the butler thought. "I mean, it's not the kind of mask the men choose. They go for skulls and birds and bulls and stuff like that. Not cats." The odd thing was that the mask had just been a pretty ginger cat head when it was on the table. On its wearer, it was still a cat head, only a lot more so, and somehow slightly more feline and a lot nastier than it should have been.
"Always wanted to be ginger," said the man.
"Hon you, it looks good, sir," trilled the butler. The cat-headed man turned his head this way and that, clearly in love with what he was seeing. Gribo yowled softly and happily to himself and ambled into the mall. He wanted something to eat, someone to fight, and then, well, he'd have to see.